Lee Chambers
on Cambridge 105 Radio.
My lovely guest is with me, Nigel Lesmore Gordon. Nigel, I've been saying your name wrong all morning, but you're telling me Lesmore is Scottish.
Lesmore is a village in Scotland. The first castle, Lesmore, was established in the 11th century. So my family is extremely ancient, and I was saying earlier, Lee, if my ancestor hadn't predeceased his father, I would be a baronet, and Lee would be having to call me Sir Nigel.
I shall call you Sir Nigel anyway. So we're here to talk about your book, Behind Closed Doors, written by Ingrid McLean, because you were known as the Acid Messiah of 60s London. There was nobody you didn't know, and we will talk about London. But you were born here in Cambridge.
I was born on Milton Road in November the 6th, 1943. Right in the middle of the war, obviously, and I look back very fondly, actually, because it was an austere time. You know, we didn't see bananas or oranges till I was about 6 years old. We grew up very skinny, eating the food that came off the fens, all organic, you see. Good start in life.
And then you were into the 50s. Of course, rationing was still going on, really, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, ration books, you know, you had a tiny amount of sweeties every week and butter and all this stuff was rationed. People don't, you know, if you weren't there, you would never think about it much. But it was an austere time. And when we grew up into our teenage years, and I was about 13 when I met Storm Thorgerson for the first time, we had a lot to kick against. We sympathised with our parents because they were trying to get their lives back together after the war. And we were under the threat of nuclear annihilation. So we read Jack Kerouac, our heads were turned, we rebelled.
And is that why you went to London?
I went to London. Well, I wanted to be a writer, and I wrote a novel, I wrote a play, I had poetry and short stories published. But I could see I wasn't going to make a living. And my friend John Dunbar, who was married to Marianne Faithfull for a while, was at Churchill College, and I was washing up there one day, and he looked through the window and said, "Why don't you go to my dad's film school?" And I said, "Well, that sounds like a good idea. Might get a proper job." And so I actually got a grant from the council to go to the London School of Film Technique.
And you mentioned Marianne Faithfull there and her friend John Dunbar. I mean, there's nobody really that you didn't know in 60s London. But how did that come? How did you enter that circle? These people didn't just open up their circle to anyone.
No, but you see, when the LSD arrived via Timothy Leary, came straight from the Sandoz laboratory in Switzerland to Leary to London. And I was distributing it. And I must say now that it was not illegal. It was not illegal. It stupidly is now, but that's another matter. So people were drifting into 101. 101 was a sort of 24/7 open house.
By 101, you mean?
Cromwell Road. 101 Cromwell Road was where Jenny, my wife, and I moved to while I was at school. And very quickly, we moved into this sort of circle of aristocrat rock and roll. I mean, I grew up with Syd Barrett and most of the Pink Floyd in Cambridge anyway, and Syd lived at 101, and moved into this sort of circle of aristocrats. And in fact, I mean, Donovan lived just down the road. Brian Jones was just around the corner. Mick was down in Chelsea.
Mick Jagger,
that is, yes. Brian, yes. So and Paul McCartney would come round and we would all trip together because that's what you did. And, you know, all you need is love. We realised that all you need is love. And the thing about this beautiful, pure LSD was you go to heaven. You literally lose all sense of I-ness and just merge in the great universal mind of beauty. So we thought, all of us, that we would change the world. And, of course, it was made illegal, and then at the end of the 60s, it all went pear-shaped.
Well, was it obvious at the time when you were hanging out with these people? I mean, lots of them were very successful, but was it obvious that they were going to be successful for a long time, that these were special people?
Yes, of course, yes. I mean, the Beatles were already huge, and the Stones were just coming up. But, I mean, you know, I loved the Beatles, but I was more of a Stones fan, you know. And I suppose initially it all started because of John Dunbar being married to Marianne. That's how I first met Mick, because she went with Nick and I then moved into that circle. And, you know, we were, PJ Proby lived just around the corner. And it, but you see, the thing at the time was, we were all in this game together. We were not sort of impressed by each other very much, you know, we were on an equal level. And I always feel really that everybody goes to the toilet. Everybody goes on the same road. Some people play a neat guitar like David Gilmour. Some people sing like Mick. But that's just what they do. It's no more wonderful, really, than being a road sweeper.
And you lost a few along the way.
We did. Well, obviously, Sid, we didn't lose immediately, although he did have a mental breakdown. Not necessarily a result of the LSD, but might be to do with a hereditary problem. And also, he did not like fame. He really did not like, couldn't do Top of the Pops. It just wasn't him. So he went. Brian, well, that's another story, the mystery of the death of Brian Jones, but there weren't many casualties, if you like. People weren't jumping out of windows. And also, I'd say that it was sex, drugs and rock and roll, but there wasn't all that much sex.
And you say it all went pear-shaped. What happened then?
Well, at the end of the 60s, you know, the music died, really. We had Janis Joplin died, Jimi Hendrix died. Trying to think of the others.
But did those deaths affected the scene then, did it?
Well, yes, it did. I mean, it did, really. And, of course, the lights really went out, literally, in 1970, because we had this three-day week of power cuts. And in 1970, I made a film with Donovan. Donovan wrote some music for a film that Mick, Marianne and I wanted to make about the quest for the Holy Grail. And Mick gave me 500 quid, which was a lot of money then. I lived for 3 months in North Wales and I wrote a script. But when I came back, I read it to him in his house and he loved it. He was, let's do it. And then he split up with Marianne, or they were splitting up, and the Stones went on a world tour. So the movie never got made, but Donovan said, and I quote, "Look here, Nigel, I'm famous. Let's make a film about me." And he had a yacht in the in the Port of Piraeus in Athens, a crew of six. He had a four-poster bed in his bedroom, and we all had cabins. And we made that was the first film I really made, proper documentary. After film school, I got a job with Camel Hudson and Brown John, David Camel, Donald Camel's brother, and Hugh Hudson made Chariots of Fire. And Hugh took a shine to me and took me on location as assistant director and then let me cut the commercials. I really learnt so much working with him. Brian came around one night with this recording. He'd done some music for a film that Anita Pallenberg was in. He was so sweet.
Are you still in touch with any of these people?
I'm very much in touch with David Gilmour. I was the one who told him that Sid was in hospital here and was on his way out. And David sent me an email, said, "You're either the bearer of good or bad news." The bad news being Sid's being ill. The good news was that I was the one that rang him from Edgerton Court in London and said, "Could you get down to Brighton and play with a band called Pink Floyd?"
Wow. And you've written all this down, or it's been written down in a book behind closed doors. What's it been like going back over these memories?
Well, I tried to write my own autobiography, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it because I didn't want to drop all names. And going back to my childhood, my mother's breaking up with my dad. It was a sad time for her. And I kind of gave up. And then Ingrid rang me one day and said, "You know Donovan?" I said, "Yes." She said, "I want to make a film about Donovan." And I said, "Be careful, Ingrid, because you're talking about music rights. You're also dealing with a famous music star. You will find it a difficult film to make." So 3 hours later, she rang up and said, "Can I write your biography?" So I said, "Well, you be my guest." You know, there's this fascination for the 60s. And, of course, yeah, I can talk about tripping with Paul McCartney.
Any regrets from that time?
No. I got married to Jenny, and we're still married after 53 years. She's put up with me.
Well, the book is called Behind Closed Doors. It's by Ingrid McLean, who you mentioned there, and you can buy it on Amazon and other websites.
Yes.
And there's an event as well.
On the 22nd of February at 6 p.m. in Helgi's Bar in Hackney, there is a launch of the book, and I'm sort of hosting the show. Ingrid will be there, and Twink from the band Tomorrow. Well, he's put together a little Sid tribute band. So there'll be live music, light shows. Should be a good evening.
And this is to launch the book. And there's all these stories and more that we've been going through in that book. I've seen it. It's quite a thick book. You've covered it all in detail.
Yes, yes.
Well, lovely to see you again.
Well, I'd love to see you again too.
Thank you, Nigel. And that book is Behind Closed Doors by Nigel Lesmore. Lesmore, yes. I've got it right this time. Gordon, good luck with it, Nigel.
Thank you.